Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on Can They Do That? Right after this. You know, 3,300 years ago, Moses instructed our fathers. He said, "You shall not have in your bag diverse weights, a great and a small. You shall not have in your house diverse measures, a great and a small. But you shall have a perfect and just weight, a perfect and a just measure shall you have." Now, you know, our founding fathers at the Constitutional Convention back in 1787 followed this scriptural principle of law when they put into our Constitution at Article 1, Section 10, these 17 words. It says, "No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debts." But back in 1933, President Roosevelt took our gold away, and in 1964, President Johnson took our silver coin out of circulation. And in place of these just weights and balances, these two presidents have introduced our current practice of the first, second, and fifth planks of the Communist Manifesto into our monetary system, and they've given us Federal Reserve notes in place of gold-backed treasury bills and clad coinage in place of silver coins. Now, in the intervening 70 years or so, we Americans have gone from being the world's number one creditor nation until today we're the world's number one debtor nation. Now, who do you think were the better financial planners for our country, Moses and our founding fathers, or Franklin D. Roosevelt and Lyndon Baines Johnson? Now, if you'd like to learn more about hard money and how to use it properly, it's another of the many lessons in our Mosaic Law School conducted twice a year here at the Law School in Isabella, Missouri. If you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order a free general law CD package? Remember, that's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. Now, it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free. You can call and order one right now. The number's 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, our Mosaic Law School is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Why don't you do it right now while you're thinking about it before you forget? Can they do that? It's a question that's asked by all of us from time to time. Can that clerk in the Holiday Inn demand a driver's license? We asked and answered that question. Can the policeman demand identification? We asked and answered that question. In life, whether it's in a supermarket or it's the doctor's office, the dentist's office, or it could be the policeman on the beat, there are demands placed upon us. Do we have to meet those demands? Do we have a legal obligation to do what people want us to do, because it's their policy at the power company or the telephone company? It's company policy. Do you have to follow that company policy? Remember, the standard that I like to use is called the Denny's restaurant waitress test. If you wouldn't do this for a Denny's waitress in the restaurant, why would you do it for the doctor, the policeman, or the public official? I remember one time my wife broke her ankle. Well, at the time we didn't know that it was broken. She stepped into a hole and she twisted her ankle and she fell down, and so she couldn't walk, and we had to do something. And so I called the emergency room down at Mountain Home, the Baxter Regional Medical Center, and I told the lady there in the emergency room, I called down to her, or whoever answered, I assume it's the emergency room, I don't know exactly, but I said, "My wife stepped in a hole over here and we think maybe her ankle's broken." And so the lady said, "Well, bring her right down. Bring her right into the ER, and we'll just x-ray it, and we'll take care of it." And so I said, "Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. Now," I said, "about how much is that going to cost?" And the lady said, "Oh, we have no way of knowing." Well, you know, think about that for a minute. You call the hospital. You know, you call a supplier. You call, about how much is that going to cost? You know, when I called the O'Reilly Auto Parts store, and I said, "I'm looking for a starter for a 1989 Chevy diesel pickup. Do you have one in stock?" He looks right. "Yep, we've got one here." "So how much does that cost?" "Oh, there's no way to know. Can't tell you." What would you think of that? Suppose you went into a Denny's restaurant and you picked up the menu and you're looking through the menu and you notice that there are no prices. You see the pictures and you say, "How much?" The waitress comes over and say, "How much for a steak and eggs for breakfast. And she says, oh, God, there's just no way to know, not until after you finished eating. What would you think of that? And yet, when you call the hospital and you say, well, how much for a broken ankle? How much for a gallbladder? How much? But you just come in, sign the blank check. We will fill in the amount. Would you do that with your auto mechanic? Would you just walk in there and the guy, you say, well, how much is it going to cost to fix my transmission? Oh, God, there's just no way to know. You just sign here, and then when it's time to pick up your car, we'll fill in the right amount. I guess there's people that do that, and I wouldn't doubt that, but I don't want to do that. So I pressed this lady down there at the hospital, and I said, well, ma'am, I said, have you ever had a broken ankle come into that hospital before? And she said, well, yes, of course we have them come in all the time. I said, good. Can you give me an idea about, you know, one, two, three of those broken ankles? What did those people pay for those broken ankles? Oh, there's just no way to know. I don't know. We'd have to get that out of the office. I'm not in the office. She steered all around the cost of a broken ankle. And I said, well, I need to know because I need to know how much money to bring. Should I bring $1,000 or $5,000 or $50,000? I've got a clue. And so when she wouldn't tell me, I guess she's programmed to do that. I suppose, you know, she said, well, it depends on whether it's a compound fracture or maybe it's a sprained ankle or maybe it's a broken ankle and requires a cast. And so, you know, I said, well, okay, let's suppose it's a broken ankle and requires a cast. What's the price for one of those? Oh, God, there's just no way to know. So I said, well, okay, thank you, lady. And so I hung up, and here's my wife. She's sitting in the kitchen, you know, with her broken ankle, and she's in some pain. And I said, geez, I don't know if I should take $1,000, $100,000, or $1,000,000. She don't know what it's going to cost. And so my wife said, well, go get the phone book, and let's see if there's a clinic or anybody else. You know, we know where the hospital is in Mountain Home. Well, maybe there's a clinic in West Plains, or maybe we should go to the doctor in Gainesville, or maybe I have to go to Springfield, or, you know, whatever. So we got to looking in the telephone book in the yellow pages, and here was the ABC Clinic, or whatever it was called. I don't remember the name of it, but the ABC Clinic over here in West Plains. So my wife got on the phone. She said, how much for a broken ankle? And the answer was $235. And my wife said, well, that can't be true. We just talked to the hospital in Mountain Home, and they said, there's no way to know. Well, we know. It's $235. Does that include the cast? Yes. X-rays? Yes. Can you take me today? Yes. Now, I don't know. Maybe there was an XYZ clinic, you know, somewhere else, maybe over in Kabul or someplace, and I could have called them maybe, and maybe they'd have done it for $230. You know, I might have been able to shave a little off of the bill, but I thought, well, $235, broken ankle, cast, X-rays. And then my wife said, who takes the cast off? We do. When 6 weeks goes by, you bring it in, we cut the cast off. So now they're going to X-ray it, they're going to put a cast on it, they're going to take the cast off, and the total bill is $235. And I said, well, that sounds better than there's no way to know. That's what kind of bothered me. We don't know, and there's no way to find out. You just bring her on in, sign the papers, and we'll fill in the amount. So we went over to the clinic. Now, when we got over to the clinic, they were really great. I mean, they were really. I walked in, and I said, I'm George Gordon, and my wife is out in the car. And so they raced out there with a wheelchair. Wife got out of the car, sat in the wheelchair. They wheeled her right into Dr. Perkins. They went to work on her. So I went over in the waiting room, and I sat down, and I'm reading Time magazine, and trying to find out what kind of propaganda the government's peddling. And this lady comes over, young girl's what it was, and looked like maybe she's in college, you know, maybe probably a little older than high school, but, you know, probably not out of college yet. I'm not quite sure about that. And she had a clipboard, and on this clipboard there was a form, and I happened to pick the form up and look on the back side. So it was 8.5 by 11, and it was had questions and printing on both sides, and it started off at the top and asked, you know, what's your name? You know, patient name. And then it went on down both sides over there, just asked lots of questions. Now, I don't remember exactly how many questions are on there, but there must have been 20, 30, 40 questions on the form. She hands it to me. I smiled. Thank you. Would you please fill this out for me? I said, yes, ma'am. It probably took me 15, 20 minutes to fill that form out. I don't know exactly, but, you know. And they're asking questions like your name, address, telephone number, social security number, where do you work, how much money do you make, do you have insurance, and if so, what's the name of the company? What kind of health insurance do you have? Do you have hemorrhoids? Are you allergic to penicillin? You know, standard doctor questions. You've probably been to the doctor's office. You've probably filled this form out many times yourself. Every doctor has one. The nurse assistant or the receptionist hands it to you. You fill it out. Nobody ever thinks very much about it. But this form asks a lot of questions that are totally irrelevant to the subject matter at hand. And probably it's innocuous. You know, like, what's your social security number? Well, the first thing that somebody wants to know when they want to steal your identity is, what's your social security number? What's your name, birth date, and social security number? And those three questions are on these doctor's office forms. And so let's assume that the lady who's working in the doctor's office as a receptionist by day is operating as an identity thief by night, and you're giving her all this information. Are you really obligated to? Is it really necessary for a broken ankle? Let's analyze it a little bit. My name. Now, your name is protected under the Fourth Amendment. It says that, and it uses the terms person, houses, papers, and effects. Your name is a part of your person. The last program we talked about, do I have to give my name to the police officer? In 26 states, the answer is no. In 24 states, the answer is yes. And twice the Supreme Court has said it's unconstitutional, and once they said there's one rare exception. The average Joe Sixpack doesn't know that, and probably doesn't even care. I know it, and I care. But I'm not ashamed of my name, and I use it quite often, you know, and so does my wife. And when I called them, I think we told them what our name was. I typically don't hide it. Sometimes I do, but I typically don't. So I thought, well, my wife, her name is Jacqueline Gordon, and so I wrote that on the line. Jacqueline Gordon, that's the patient. Okay, so I conceded that much. I could have wrote in there Janet Reno or Janice Sixpack or Jane Housewife or, you know, whatever I wanted, but I thought Jacqueline Gordon's probably okay. But then right away they want to know what your address is. I thought about the Denny's waitress. I went in to order a hamburger for lunch, and the Denny's waitress says, what's your name? I've noticed that when I go to Denny's, the waitress has never asked me for my name. You know that? Well, unless she was looking for a date or something, I guess. But I'm old, fat, bald, and ugly, and no waitress has ever asked me my name going into Denny's. I think they're sitting there saying, this grotesque old fool, I hope I don't have to ever serve him again. You know, probably because I'm really ugly, but so far I haven't faced that eyeball to eyeball. They don't even ask me my name, and they can serve me a lunch, take my money, smile at me. You know, they always smile. Did you ever notice that? Go to Denny's, they always smile at you. Even if they don't like you, they smile. Trained, I guess. So I've never had a Denny's waitress ask me for my address, although if they did, I would think that was kind of out of order. And so when I go to the doctor's office and they want to know what my address is, I say to myself, applying the Denny's waitress test, why would I want to give them my address? Sometimes when they ask me, well, why don't you want me to give you my address, I ask them, are you going to write me a letter? Test it sometime. When somebody asks you for your address, ask them, are you going to write me a letter? And every time I've asked that question, everybody I've asked it of, without exception, has said no. Well, if you're not going to write me a letter, are you going to come over and visit me? Every single time they say no. Well, if you're not going to write me a letter and you're not going to come and visit, why do you want to know my address? You ever thought about that? Test it sometime. Next time somebody asks you for your address, ask them if they're going to write you a letter and see if they don't say, no, I don't have any intention of writing you a letter. Ask them if they're going to come visit you and see if they don't say, no, I hadn't planned on it, don't have any intention of coming and visiting. They always ask you for your address. What relevance does it have? Let me ask you this. Let's suppose that my address was 2204 Jones Road. Would you then say, no, we will not fix your broken ankle because we do not treat people that come from Jones Road? What if you said, my address is 2204 Jones Road and I live in Isabella, Missouri, and my zip code is 65676, and the girl says, nope, we do not serve people whose zip code ends in the number 6. Sorry, if your zip code ends in the number 5, we could serve you, but your number is 6, and therefore we do not serve. What the hell difference does your zip code or your street address or your address have to do with putting a cast on your leg? They also ask for social security number. I wrote in there none, N-O-N-E. My wife does not have a social security number. And when I got through filling this form out, both sides, I put in there no, none, never, Fourth Amendment, Fifth Amendment, First Amendment. I answered every question, both sides. I didn't fail. I handed back my paper. It's like I did to Mrs. Wiles, my third grade teacher. I passed my paper forward. I had my name and the date on it and the lesson heading on my paper passed forward. Mrs. Wilds got my paper, and she's going to grade it. This young lady graded my paper. It didn't take her long either. As soon as I passed it in, I went over, sat down, picked up my Time magazine, and that girl was on me like you know what. So she said, oh, Mr. Gordon, this isn't filled out correctly. She was very patronizing. See, I'm an old man, and so for you young people out there, you don't face this yet, but you will. See, when you're old and there's a mistake made, people don't want to come over and say, look, you old fool, Can't you fill out this paper? You'd think somebody your age would be able to write the right answers in the blanks, you dummy. I'm sure that's what she was thinking, but they don't do that with old people. They come over and they're kind of patronizing, like, oh, maybe he's suffering from Alzheimer's disease and he forgot who he was or what his address was. So maybe if I coach him a little bit, he can remember his address and his social security number. So if you ever hand me a piece of paper, young lady, I want to tell you right up front, I might be old and I was born at night, but I wasn't born last night. And yes, I can read. Slow. I'm a slow reader. 237 words a minute. Got tested by Evelyn Woods years and years ago. She said, there's no way in hell that we can help you read any faster. 237 words a minute. And they said to me, we can't help you. You're just too damn dumb. They couldn't help me for $1,200. And so I read books from the back to the front. Hell, if I started in the front, I'd never finish the book. So I start with the last chapter. I always finish the book. And I read the last chapter first. Then I go back to the table of contents. Hell, I already knew who killed the baker, the butler, and the bottle washer before I ever read the table of contents. I know the answer. I start in the back of the book. Well, anyway, this girl comes over, and she said to me, she said, this isn't filled out right. And she said, now, what's your social security number? And I said, none, N-O-N-E. And I looked at it, and I looked it right at the spot, and I said, see, I answered that question correctly. The little girl, she looked at me like, God, you're dumb. I don't think that girl could believe that an old man could be that stupid. And so she wanted to know what my address was, and I asked her if she's going to write me a letter, and sure enough, she said no. I said, well, if you're going to write me a letter, then what do you need my address for? She said, we need it for our records. And I said, well, okay. And so she said, well, what's your address? And I said, I'm not going to tell you. It says so right there. Look at that. It says Fourth Amendment objection. Can you read that? She was just dumbfounded. This girl's probably 22 or 3 years old. Here's a standard form. She hands this out to everybody that walks in the door. Everybody that she hands it to fills it out. They put their name, address, social security number, birth date, where they work, how much money they make, and whether they use Preparation H or not. I ain't telling you people what I'm putting on my hind end. I'm not even going to tell you whether or not I put something on my hind end. It's none of your damn business. And besides that, it's personal. And whether I use Preparation H or not and put it on my hind end or put it behind my ears is totally irrelevant to a broken ankle, isn't it? They ask you that question. Do you have hemorrhoids? Excuse me. I didn't come in here for hemorrhoid treatment. I came in here for a broken ankle. What the hell difference does my hemorrhoids have? My hemorrhoids are on the other end of the broken ankle. Now, that's assuming I've got him right. See where we're going with this? All of the questions on this form have absolutely not a question on there. They asked, do you have a broken ankle? So I can answer yes. Or I don't know. Or we think so. Or maybe. We haven't seen the x-rays yet. They never asked any relevant question to the broken ankle issue. They ask a lot of questions about Social Security. Do you have insurance? So the girl was a little bit frustrated, so she went and talked to Dr. Perkins. She came back and she asked me this question. She said, how are you going to pay for today's services? Well, I knew exactly. I said, with gold. And when I said, with gold, she didn't know how to respond. Nobody had ever told her that before. How are you going to pay for today's services? I'm going to pay in Russian rubles. I'm going to pay in European euros. I'm going to pay in English pounds. I'm going to pay in Indian rupees. I'm going to pay in Japanese yen. You know, nobody had ever raised the issue, I guess. And so when she asked me, I told her, I'm going to pay you in gold. And she said, I don't know if we take gold. I'll have to go ask Dr. Perkins. I could have told her. I could have said, you people don't take gold here. Hell, I knew that. I could have said, you probably wouldn't recognize a gold coin if I handed you one. You probably wouldn't know what the hell you had. But she went in, talked to Dr. Perkins, came back, and she said, oh, I'm terribly sorry, Mr. Gordon, we don't take gold. And I said, well, what do you take? And she said, well, we take MasterCard, Visa. We'll take your check. Now think about this. Hang on a second. You hand me a form and you say, fill this out. And I say to you, I'm not going to fill it out. You ask me what my address is, I say Fourth Amendment objection. You ask me what my Social Security number is, I say none. You've never seen me before in your life. You don't know me from Joe Sixpack. I walked in off the street. I got a broken ankle. I want you to fix it. You're in there fixing it, and you say, how are you going to pay for this? I say, with gold. And you say, we don't take gold. See, we don't take gold. I say, well, what do you want? And you say, we will take your check. Would you take a check from somebody like this? This woman said, we will take your check. But she said, we will take your check after. She said, we'll take your credit card. And I said, I don't have a credit card. She was shocked. It was like What? You don't have a credit card? And I said, no, I don't have any credit. She was even more shocked. And she said, you don't have any credit? I said, well, no, I'm a deadbeat. Now, after I said, I don't have a credit card, I don't have any credit, and I'm a deadbeat, she said, well, we'll take your check. Would you take a check from somebody like this? Well, this clinic would. You offer them gold, and they say, we want gold, but we'll take your check. We don't know who you are, where you live, or anything about you. And you've admitted that your credit's no good. You don't have any, no credit cards, and you're a deadbeat, but we'll take your check. Honest to God, you can't make this stuff up now. Don't write me a letter and tell me I'm lying to you. You couldn't make up a story like that. You couldn't think of something that stupid. Well, you know, unless your IQ is down around 75, 80, something like that, maybe you might be able to think up something like this. But okay. So she went back and told Dr. Perkins the story. He couldn't contain himself. By now, he's done. See, he's got the cast on. He came out. He's an older fellow. You know, doctors are kind of old guys, you know, typically. Oh, you run into these young punks once in a while with pimples, but not very often. And so this old doctor, he comes out, and he says, I just have to meet you. You're something else. And I'd ask this girl, you know, in the conversation, she had to go in there 2, 3, 4 times. I asked her, I said, do you take Federal Reserve notes? And she said, no. Honest to God, I said, gee, could I give you a Federal Reserve note? And she said, no. Went and asked Dr. Perkins. Anyway, the bill was $235. Here's the kicker. I gave her 3 $100 bills to pay a bill for $235. And do you know they couldn't make change? I'm in a doctor's office. The bill's $235. You hand them 3 $100 bills, and they can't make change. So the doctor reaches in his pocket, he pulls out some bills, and he makes the change. Hey, like that. Huh? Doctors' offices don't take money, they take insurance. They take checks and credit cards. I was talking to a service station guy one time, and I asked him, what percentage of your business is done in cash? And he said, 7%. 7% of his business is in cash. All the rest is credit cards and checks. Service station. They like that. Huh? All right, now, keeping that in mind, you know, when we apply the Denny's restaurant test to the doctor's office and ask ourselves, you walk in, you're going to pay cash. You walk in, you're going to pay cash at Denny's. You walk into the doctor's office, you're going to pay cash. You don't need to fill out all this information any more than you would in a restaurant. You walk in, my name is George Gordon, there's the broken ankle, fix it, and here's your money. It's just that most people don't do business that way. So they want a credit application. That's what that is. It's a credit application. You're applying for credit at the doctor's office. I don't want any credit. I'll just pay you. People don't pay for medical services. They don't. They don't want to. They want insurance. That's why we're arguing over this national health care insurance. You want somebody else to pay the bill for you. You want a free lunch. All right, let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, it's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. And The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, all of which can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one by calling the law school and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct, at least to the best of our knowledge and belief. And the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing or recommending will necessarily reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review, they may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. However, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine or mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, talking about the Denny's waitress and talking about the doctor's office story, we're asking the question and answering it, can they do that? They can do it if you let them. Now, privacy is a pretty important function of life, at least I think it's a pretty important function. Americans typically do not guard their privacy very well, and that's why you have identity theft. Nobody has stolen George Gordon's identity. And you're going to say, yet, nobody is going to steal George Gordon's identity. And that's because I live a lifestyle based upon the Ten Commandment model of economics as opposed to the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto model. You see, these are two economic models. One of them lends itself easily and readily to theft, and the other does not. You see, I don't have any credit. And I know you're going to sit there and say, oh, like Judy Hartson, like, well, you must be some kind of a dingling if you don't have any credit. I used to have credit, but I always misused it. I'm the kind of guy that couldn't handle credit. I used to have 28 credit cards. I maxed them all out, got myself into trouble, couldn't pay the debt. George Gordon is a credit card junkie. You hand me a credit card, and I'm like a heroin addict. I ain't had a hit for a week. I just go hog wild. Why, you give me a credit card, and I'll act like Bill Clinton in a whorehouse with a credit card. I just couldn't handle credit. I know. I hate to admit that, too. I like to think of myself as being invincible. Really tough, John Wayne type. But I tested that credit card thing, and I couldn't handle it. More than I could handle. So I woke up one day, and I said, well, since I'm like an alcoholic, you know, with a bottle of beer, I guess I better quit messing around with these credit cards. Like an alky, you know, I guess I better quit messing around with that booze because I just can't handle it. And giving George Gordon credit cards is like giving an Indian a bottle of whiskey. Just can't handle it. All right, now that being the case, then what do you do about that? How do you deal with those kinds of problems in life? Well, I mean, one day you got to wake up, smell the coffee, and say, well, I got to get control of myself here. And one of the best ways that I've discovered to get control over your privacy is to take control of your privacy. Now, I like the Army. They got a system, you know, the military people. They call it a need to know. So I give people information about me on a need to know basis. If I go to a doctor's office and the guy says, why are you here? I got a broken ankle. Why? Well, the doctor needs to know why I'm here. Am I here for hemorrhoids? Am I here for a broken ankle? Or have I got depression, headache? What, you know, what's the problem? But now once we're here to take care of that problem, the doctor really doesn't need to know anything about my hemorrhoids or my depression or whether or not I've got credit and pay my credit card bills or not. He doesn't need to know any of that. He doesn't need to know my social security number. Doesn't need to know my address, where I work, whether I suffer from depression. So totally irrelevant. Just zero in, doc, on this broken ankle. That's the first job. Let's get that one done first. Then we can talk about the next job and so on down the line. So when people ask questions, sometimes they're asking questions that to them are routine, but which are personal and private, and I don't have any duty to answer. Other times you're dealing with public officials, and sometimes the public official thinks that he has a job or a duty that he really doesn't have. Let me tell you a little story here. It's called the Garden City Water Meter Story. The Garden City Water Meter Story. I'd rented an office in Garden City, Idaho, and I put my home. I moved into this office. It was on Chinden Boulevard across from the Outlaw restaurant. And it was comfortably situated between a uniform store and a stereo store. It used to be an insurance office, 2,400 square feet, pretty good sized store. 2,400 square feet, that's a big store. Hell, it's a big house, 2,400 square feet. $1,200 a month. Now, at that time, back in the 1980s, early 80s, I could have rented a house anywhere in Boise for four. In fact, I did. I was up on the first bench in a house for $4.25 a month. So, you know, I had a nice house and up there, but I wanted to have a second home down on Chinden Boulevard, down kind of in the slums of Boise. And so they had a policy down there in the Garden City zoning plan to zone commercial out of residential. So you could not have a business up in your home or operating, you know, up here in the residential area. But they didn't zone residential out of commercial. They didn't say you couldn't have your home down here in the Outlaw restaurant. So I got four offices in here, and I turned them into master bedroom and Bob's bedroom and George's bedroom and Shaw's bedroom and so on. And you know, things are going along pretty good. And one day, you know, I had to get the utilities put in there. And so when I put in the utilities, I went down to the phone company, and when I made an application for a telephone, I said, I want a resident's phone put in here. And she said, but this is a commercial location. I said, that's true, but I don't want a commercial phone. And the reason for that was a commercial phone in those days cost $500 a month, business phone. But a commercial phone, I mean, a residence phone, if I remember, it was $24 a month. So I don't want to spend $500 a month. So you can't have the push-button telephone with the various connections, you know, with four or five offices. All you could have there was just one telephone with an extension. And then you could have a teenage phone with an extension, but you had to have two different numbers. So I had them put in two telephones with two different numbers into two bedrooms and two extensions into two other bedrooms. Now, it wasn't all that convenient, you know. When Peggy would, my secretary, would answer the telephone, then she'd have to say, George, that's for you. Pick it up. And so then I'd pick up the extensions. When the other phone rang, Bob would pick it up, and then he would yell out, hey, that's for you, Tony. And so Tony would pick up the telephone. And so that's the way we were conducting our private business. Say, well, Garden City furnished the water. And the water company required that businesses, commercial places, had to pay a $50 deposit, $50 water deposit. Residences didn't have to pay it. Well, this is a residence. I just converted it into a residence. It's zoned commercial. But remember, residences aren't zoned out of commercial. Commercial is zoned out of residences. Can't have your business in your home, but you can have your home in your business. Now, the reason for doing this is because I don't want to pay this $500 a month phone bill. So the phone company went along with me, the power company, gas company, garbage company, everybody's on board except for the water company. So I went down to City Hall and I said, here, I want to pay my water bill. And the girl said, that's commercial. You got to pay $50. I said, no, it doesn't. I said, no, it doesn't. That's residential because I moved my home in there. And I'm going to pay you 3 months in advance. So she took my money, and I didn't pay her for the $50 deposit. And she said, well, I'll pass this on up to Lindsay, what they say. I said, thank you very much. But now I've got 3 months paid on my water bill. They took the money. It's not crucial, but it's pretty important. It worked out real good. So here we are, and we're working away here. And so pretty soon I went into the kitchen to get a cup of coffee or something, and I turned on the faucet, and there's no water. Now, I'm an old-timey plumber. So right away, when I turn on the water and there's no water coming out the pipes, you know, you have to go to where the water comes in. So you go out to the curb on the sidewalk, and there'll be a little box out there, you know. And then you got to have a screwdriver to open the thing up, and you get it off, and you look down inside there, and down inside, there's going to be a water meter and a shutoff valve and so on. I looked down inside that box, and the water meter was there, but the water was shut off. The valve was turned off. Well, I'm a pretty smart plumber, being real good educated and all in plumbing. And I could see right away what I needed was a 12-inch crescent wrench to turn that valve back to the on position. So I got one, came back, and turned on the valve. And worked like shot. Had water. Everything's going good. And I had demonstrated to everybody my plumbing skills and ability, and everybody was duly impressed. Some time went by, and one day I went back to the kitchen to get another drink of water, and turned on the water, and there's no water. Now, being an expert plumber that I am, knowing how to turn the water valve on, went and got my 12-inch crescent wrench, went and got my screwdriver, so I could open the box, reach down inside, turn it back. I figured there's got to be some teenage, pimply-faced punk kid over here, you know, just being obnoxious and being a juvenile delinquent, is what I was thinking. Went out there, opened the box, looked down inside, and I could not believe my eyeballs. The water meter was gone. Just G-O-N gone. Wasn't there. There's just a space between the shutoff valve, a big hole, and an empty pipe. Well, again, being an expert plumber, I could see immediately the solution to the problem was a bridge, a piece of pipe from the shutoff valve over to the pipe. But if you do that, you'll be stealing their water, because there's no way to meter it. Say the meter's gone. Well, you can't do that. That's against the law. Now, you people need to understand. We need to obey all the laws of Garden City, all the laws of Ada County, all the laws of the state of Idaho, all the laws of the United States of America, and all the laws of God, and do it all at the same time. That's tricky, not impossible now, just tricky. So for emergency use, I went and got some milk cans and 5-gallon cans and bottles, and we filled them up, and we could make coffee. We could haul the water in. You know, and we did. And you can flush the toilet, you know, pour water in the tank and push it, or you can just pour it right down the bowl if you want to. I mean, we could get by, but we want to solve this problem with the city. And so I called the health department and I said, if there was nasties floating around in the toilet, would that constitute a health hazard? And that lady down there at the health department said, oh my God, yes. And I said, could you send somebody out and investigate? I think we have a health hazard here. And so they sent out a lady, not to belabor the issue, but she was a little overweight, maybe a little chunky, wearing high-heeled shoes, you know. She's trying to prance around on them high heels like Tinkerbell, you know. Now, when you weigh about 300 pounds and you're trying to balance on them high heels, you know, that makes quite a show. I think she'd be better off with some Buster Brown high tops, but not here to tell people their fashion problems. So, anyway, she's kind of mincing around, prancing around there with her clipboard, and she wrote up a big red sticker and stuck it in the window of my new home on Chinden Boulevard, and she gave us 5 days to vacate. I mean, I was on about a Thursday, and by Tuesday, we had to be out of there. That's because it was a health hazard. You know, you got to correct this health hazard. You got to call a plumber. You got to do something. So I went in, sat down, wrote up a complaint, went down, filed the complaint, served it on the city attorney. And then I got to tell you, that city attorney was not happy at all. When I walked in, I couldn't serve it because I'm a party. And so under Idaho rules, I had to have somebody who was over the age of 18. You know, Bob Hallstrom said it. I had to do it. Bob and I went down there, drove down his car. He walked in, served the city attorney. I mean, that guy used a lot of bad words. He called me everything but a white man. I'm telling you. And I asked him, I said, now, I see you're taking this kind of personal. Like, what the hell difference does it make to you? It ain't like I'm stealing your water. You know, it ain't like I'm giving you the $50 loan. Now, what the city wants is a $50 interest-free loan until I close out my bill and so on. I don't blame them. But the question arises, well, can they do that? I don't think you can do that. Now, most people over $50, you know, they're not going to go through all this. You know, they don't want this kind of a hassle over $50. So they just pay that $50 interest-free loan to the city. After all, it's their policy and everybody else does it. See, the guy at the water department, he called me on the phone a couple of times. And he called me a deadbeat. He was kind of nasty, too. He called me a lot of bad names. Well, not really bad names, but, you know, kind of like deadbeat, stupid, you know, think you're better than everybody else and don't obey the law and can't follow the rules. And, you know, probably about the same as a drill sergeant, you know, in Marine boot camp, you know, going to whip these guys into shape because they're stupid. Well, anyway, we got a complaint cooking down here. And so now we got to move out, you know, here about Tuesday. Well, on Monday, Peggy yelled over to my office. See, we didn't have an intercom system. This wasn't really a real office. It was kind of like a home office, you know. Kind of like I've been running my business for years. Really isn't a real business. It's just kind of a make-believe business, you know. Taking a real business with a real telephone, you know, it's got these, you got to yell across the hall, hey, that's for you. So I picked it up, and it was Mayor Mockwitz. It was the mayor of Garden City, population 8,000. I had never talked to a mayor in my life. I was thrilled, I got to tell you. It'd be like getting a call from Rudy Giuliani now, wouldn't it? Or Mayor Feinstein of San Francisco. You know, before Feinstein became a senator, she used to be the mayor of San Francisco. Can you imagine getting a call from Dianne Feinstein, the mayor of San Francisco? Well, I got a call from Mayor Mockwitz, city of Garden City, and I was duly impressed. And I said, yes, ma'am. And we got chit-chatting a little bit, and she said, now, don't you think that this is, and she worded that, you know, kind of petty, kind of, you know, it doesn't really rise to the level of a real lawsuit. Don't you think that we can settle this? Isn't there some way we can deal with this? And so, shucks, you know, I'm an easy guy to get along with. And I said, oh, of course there is. You know? And she said, well, could we talk this over? And I said, certainly we can. And so I suggested that I meet her down in her office, you know, down at City Hall. I'm on 42nd Street. She's on 84, about 42 blocks down. So I jumped in my car, raced down there to Mayor Mockwitz, went in. She had a secretary. She poured us coffee. I went in the mayor's office, sat in the big chair across from the mayor. And so we chit-chatted, you know, a little bit about the weather and all this nonsense. It doesn't make any sense. Then we got down to the real nitty-gritty. How come you ain't paid your $50? And I said, well, because I don't owe you $50. And she said, well, that's a business, and that's a business site, and you got to pay your $50. And I said, ma'am, I'm not running a business there. That's my home. And then she said, well, you know, we got zoning here. And I said, well, I looked that up, and I noticed that you zoned commercial out of residential, so I didn't move my business up there into my home. I moved my home down into the business office. And she said, you mean you've got a residence? You're paying commercial prices for a residence on Chinon Boulevard? I said, yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am, ma'am. And she was surprised. She was shocked. She was dumbfounded. She'd never run into anybody like me before. And I'll bet you she's never run into anybody like me since either. And so I said, what we want to do here is we want to litigate this to the U.S. Supreme Court and find out whether or not you can force a homeowner to pay that $50 living in a residence on Chinon Boulevard in a commercial location. Now, just for your information, to run this case through to the Supreme Court costs about $250,000. That's $250,000. And what is it that we're arguing over? A $50 interest-free deposit. That's 50 against 250. And by the way, I can take a case clear to the U.S. Supreme Court by myself, pro se, for about $2,000. $2,000. Let's see. Now, the insurance company is going to pay $250, and I'm going to pay $2. I told a lawyer one time for an insurance company after he beat me fair and square in court, spent $32,000. Tim Gammon was his name. Paid $32,000 to defeat me. Came out. He was all smiles. Of course, when you lose, don't feel good. And he kind of rubbed it into me, told me about how he waxed my, you know what. And I said, Tim, I got to hand it to you. You're smarter than I am, and you're a better lawyer than I am, and you beat me fair and square. And I said, and you handed me this bill for $32,000, which I ain't going to pay. And it cost me $2,000. And to show you how fair I'm going to be, I'm going to give you another shot at me. I'm going to go out and do this again and let you spend another $32,000 and beat me again. And then I'll let you do it a third time. I'll let you spend $32,000 to beat me a third time. Because I think I've got more $2,000 bills than your insurance company has $32,000 bills, and your insurance company ain't going to sit still for that. They're not going to pay $32,000 to find out whether or not I've got this or that right, privilege, or immunity, because they really don't care. And I was never bothered by Webster County again, I'll tell you. Broke those guys from sucking eggs. And Garden City did the same thing. Me and the mayor settled up, and I said, you put my water meter back in, and I'll go down and file a voluntary motion to dismiss. And she said, that sounds good to me. I'll bet you if I'd have said, Ann, write me a check for $1,000 for my trouble, I bet she would have done it. Because, see, as soon as they called the insurance company, you know what's going to happen? They got a $5,000 deductible. Hell, I knew that before I walked in the door. Furthermore, the insurance company is going to have to defend that, and that's going to cost them $12,000 for a three-day trial. Does the insurance company want to pay $12,000 to litigate with me and the city $5,000 to litigate with me over their deductible over something called $50 deposit? Huh? Come on. Let's wake up and smell the coffee here, kids. Can they do that? Oh, yeah. They can take your water meter out. They did. But, you know, after everybody reflected upon their actions after the fact, everybody came to the conclusion, you know, we really don't want the answer to this. We really don't want to go to the Supreme Court of the United States to find out whether or not you can zone residential out of commercial. Now, we know you can, but you haven't done it. Can you make me pay that $50? Maybe they could, but they really didn't want to know the answer because they didn't want to spend that kind of money to find out. See where we're going here, boys and girls? Can they do that? Maybe we should ask, do they really want to do that? And the answer there was, nope, they didn't. And here we are again, out of time. So I got to remind you that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. And we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the internet and radio. Now, if you'd like more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact desk, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has a radio log schedule and archives. And all of it can be accessed through the webpage at georgegordon.org. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We're out of here. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.